Undertaker. This is Paul Bearer. And I need to know, what are you listening to?
We're listening to Pro Wrestling Nation, PWN. Rest in peace.
Oh, yay! Rest in peace!
Don't dare be sour. Put your hands together and feel the power. Welcome to another amazing, exciting, awesome, stupendous, death-defying, action-packed episode of Pro Wrestling Nation. I, of course, am your host. My name is Funky Sam Medina. I am thrilled and excited to bring you Pro Wrestling Nation. I'm going to adjust this real quick. Pro Wrestling Nation is a pro wrestling podcast that you can find every single week on iTunes, Stitcher, Beyond Pod, the TuneIn app, RedDragonsRadio.com, and of course, Gerwick.net. That's G-E-R-W-E-C-K, Gerwick.net, your number one source for pro wrestling since 1997. Speaking of Gerwick.net, head over to Gerwick.net right now, or Gerwick on your podcast feed, whatever you use for podcasts. Just type in, search Gerwick. Steve Gerwick has an exclusive interview up right now with Barbie Blank, a.k.a. Kelly Kelly. So go check it out. Also, recently he has interviewed Rachel Ellering. And her last name is a hard part for me to remember. I'm like, Rachel, she's Paul Ellering's daughter. Rachel Ellering is a pretty recent interview from Steve Gerwick. And also Maddie Max, who's an upcoming... female wrestler. I mean, I guess they're all upcoming female wrestlers here, except for Kelly Kelly. She's a legend in our industry. Kelly Kelly's here on Gerwick.net to talk the WAGs. And if you don't know what the WAGs are, then go check out the podcast. Welcome to another amazing, exciting edition of Pro Wrestling Nation. I, of course, am your host. My name is Funky Sam Medina. I am a wrestling fan. I am a stand-up comedian. And I am a performer at the San Jose Improv on August 31st. If you are in the San Jose area, hit me up on Twitter, Facebook, whatever you got. And I'll get you some tickets to see me, Funky Sam Medina, performing live at the San Jose Improv on August 30th here in San Jose, California. Welcome to the show, people. I'm going to make this intro pretty short and sweet because I have a long conversation with my guests. That's right. This week I have two guests for you. I have Frank D, Big Frank D, and I have Atlee Green. Frank D and Atlee Green are here courtesy of Gerwick.net. They both have podcasts on the network. They work on the YouTube channel. They're contributors. They've been with Gerwick for a long time. And they sat down with the new kid on the block, the new blockhead on the block. And we talked about Money in the Bank. We talked about the brand split. We talked about Roman Reigns getting suspended. We talked about Seth Rollins. We talked about John Cena. We talked about everything underneath the sun about professional wrestling. So go ahead and check that out. I'm going to go to that in a minute here. Make sure that you follow the podcast on what? On Twitter. I'm just like messing up, you guys. Make sure you follow the podcast on Twitter at PWN Podcast and follow Gerwick.net on Twitter at Gerwick, G-E-R-W-E-C-K. My two guests are here, courtesy of Gerwick.net. It is a million degrees. I've had a busy weekend, and I waited until today to do the podcast. And if you can hear the fan going, I had two fans going because it's hot and I don't have air conditioning. And I turned one of them off just so it wouldn't be too loud for you guys. And now I'm just like sweating and dying. So I'm going to make this intro short and sweet. Currently, I am in the process of downloading WWE 2K16 on PC here. So also working on the podcast kind of slows that down. Where am I at? 72%, you guys. And it's downloading it pretty slow because I'm using other programs on the computer. If that's why I kind of been like trying not to do it all day. And plus it's been hot as hell today. I was going to do it earlier this morning when I got off work, but I was really tired. And then I'm like, oh, I think I'll download WWE 2K16. So I get on the computer. The first thing I do is start downloading WWE 2K16. And that was like 7 hours ago. And I'm still downloading it. But whatever. It's on Steam, you guys. And I don't know if you guys know this, but there's an entire community of like modders that mod. They add characters to the game, and it's really, really cool. I'm honestly thinking about doing a YouTube of my universe because I can record off of the computer. I can't record off the PS4, but I can record off the computer video and audio. So I was actually thinking about doing a universe mode on YouTube because I'll have all the coolest guys. I'll have AJ Styles with his theme song and with his Titantron, Nakamura with his theme song and Titantron, and I'll have all kinds of cool stuff. But that's a different story. And if I do end up doing that, I'll definitely let you guys know on the podcast. I'll definitely let you guys know on the podcast. But right now, I am sweating in my own eyeballs, and I need to get the heck out of here. So I'm going to kick it over to my conversation I had with Frank D and Atlee Green of Garrick.net. It's a long conversation. It's a very, very long conversation. It's like about an hour and a half. We talked on the phone. We talked on Skype for like over 2 hours. And this is the podcast portion of our conversation. And we talked for about an hour before the podcast, and we talked for about half an hour or so after the podcast. It was great. It was a lot of fun. The three of us, I feel like we really gelled. Like those two guys, they've been podcasting and YouTubing and all this stuff together for a while now. And they've been friends for a while, and they've been kind of on the same team for a while and like that. So of course they have the chemistry, but I felt like I just kind of like, I gelled right in there with these guys. And, the three of us had a really good chemistry, and it was really fun. And, you know, there's a little bit of, who's talking, this guy's talking or this guy's talking. And it was the first time the three of us were actually together in a conversation. It was the first time I talked to either one of those two, like besides like messaging on Facebook or, you know, on Twitter or whatever. It was a good time. I really liked the guys, and, I hope to have them on again, you know, individually, together, whatever. It was a really good time. And so, myself, Frank D, and Atlee Green, three of us are here courtesy of Garrick.net. Enjoy. I'm going to sign off now. So when the conversation's over, that's going to be the end of the podcast. And, I just want to say thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. Follow me on Twitter at PWM Podcast. Follow Garrick on Twitter at GERWECK. And, until next time, you guys, same, podcast channel, same podcast time. I will see you guys next week. Thank you very much for listening. Here is my conversation that I had with Frank D and Atlee Green of Garrick.net. Gentlemen, welcome to the podcast. I am your host, Funky Sam Medina. I am on the line with Garrick.net contributors, Atlee Green. What's up, Atlee?
What's going on?
And Frank D. How's it going, Frank?
What's going on, Sam? How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good, you guys. I appreciate you guys joining me.
Thank you for having us.
So first, Atlee, tell us about Breaking Raw and what you do with Garrick.net.
I've actually been writing for Garrick.net since 2007, Steve Gerwig himself put out an ad saying that he's looking for somebody to start covering MMA news. And I reached out and told him, hey, you know, I've written for my college newspaper and all this other stuff, so I'd like to have a shot at it, and gave me the shot. And then I started doing MMA commentary articles, did live event coverage for UFC events, and then I think it was around 2011 where Steve said, hey, you know, I'm going to stop doing the MMA coverage because I think the fans prefer us to be a pro wrestling site only. So then I just said, hey, well, I'm actually a big pro wrestling fan too, and done some work in the independent. And everything, and he's like, oh, well, would you want to stay on and write about wrestling? And I said, sure. And so I've been doing that, and then kind of got into the podcast game, doing my own Body Slam podcast with my friends Todd Graham and Ryan Andrews. And then once that stopped, Frank D and I connected, and we started. Frank D had me on board for the Raw deal, and been doing that ever since. And then I decided to do a Raw recap show every week called Breaking Raw, which actually is going to change a little bit once the draft happens, but I'll have more details on the changes to Breaking Raw in the next couple of weeks.
Nice, nice. Breaking the main roster, huh?
Oh, yeah.
That's cool. That's cool. How about you, Frank? Tell us a little bit about what you do with the GRP and with Gerwig.net and how you got started with that.
Pretty much I've known Steve Gerwig since 2005. I was a regular guest host on the old Gerwig Report hotline back in the day. And pretty much how the GRP came into being is basically Steve and I would have these long conversations on the telephone, and we're kind of like, well, why don't we just do a podcast? So we started doing a podcast, the Gerwig Report podcast, which you can listen to at Gerwig.net. And we've added Teddy Long, who is a former general manager of SmackDown, been in the wrestling business for about 30 years. He's a part of our show now, so that's great to have him on board. And myself and Abby Green also do the Raw Deal podcast, which is exclusive to our YouTube channel, which is at youtube.com/GerwigNet. So we got a lot of things going on.
Awesome, awesome. And you also run the YouTube page?
That's correct.
And tell us about the YouTube page, because it's growing. It's about, what, 1,000 subscribers now?
Yeah, over 1,000 subscribers, and people will check out our content, and I'm getting a lot of positive feedback from a lot of people out there, which is cool. It's always great to interact with the listeners out there and see what they want. Myself and Atlee, we've been talking about doing different things with the YouTube channel as far as, like, non-wrestling content. You know, him and I are big, you know, DC Universe fans. I think Atlee's, you know, a bigger, you know, Marvel fan than I am, so we, you know, kind of want to integrate that into our conversation as well. So we're going to have a lot of different things coming up shortly to the YouTube channel.
Well, Frank, oh, you, man, also had a cool conversation on the YouTube channel about the Halloween movie series.
Oh, yes, cool. I almost forgot. My boy,
I liked it.
My boy Efren Guzman from the Atomic Podcast. Yes, yeah, we did a episode of his show, and we talked about John Carpenter returning to the Halloween franchise. So if you want to take a listen to that, it's over right now on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/GerwigNet is where to go.
That's awesome. Yeah, definitely check that out. Definitely check that out. So did you guys have a chance to see Money in the Bank?
I did indeed.
I heard Frank over there talk Steve Gerwig into getting the network so he could watch it too.
Yeah, that was hard, man. Because, you know, Steve is, like I said, Steve is stubborn when it comes to things like this. I mean, he would rather watch all the Teddy Long White Boy challenges than watch Money in the Bank. And, you know, I'm kind of in there with him, you know what I'm saying? I'm still mixed on Money in the Bank, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah, I liked some of the matches, but you're right. They didn't really give us a strong card because they were going up against the NBA Game 7 Finals.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you guys think that affected Money in the Bank at all, like, as far as the planning of it?
I don't think it affected the planning of Money in the Bank because you really can't do anything to counteract Money in the Bank as far as the NBA Finals, because you had the two best players in the league right now going as Stephen Curry and LeBron James, and that's something that any sports fan is not going to want to miss. So I think the WWE just said, this is our plan, let's go with it, and whatever happens, happens.
Yeah,
I have to agree with Atlee on that. I don't think I heard it at all. I think that WWE knew ahead of time circumstances of the outcomes of different matches, and they just went ahead and did what they did. The fact that it was in a new arena and they actually had a crowd, I don't really think the crowd was all that hot to begin with, but they got him to come up in some of the matches there. But I don't think the NBA Finals hurt it at all. I think people kind of made up their mind throughout the week. If you look on social media, hey, you know what? Screw Money in the Bank. We're going to watch, you know, the NBA Finals here. And once it was over, then I think people, you know, started watching the show on demand.
You know, they had the pay-per-view in Vegas, the T-Mobile Arena, like you just said. I feel like a lot of the attention that Vegas would have given the show, I mean, it's WWE, so it wouldn't have got that much attention, but the attention it would have gotten was kind of away from it because of the basketball game.
I think you might be right there. I think that, I mean, they had people there. You know, obviously, they had 14,000 people there, but I don't really think the people, if you listen to the crowd reactions or lack thereof throughout the night, especially when it came down to some of those other matches that nobody really gave a damn about, and some boring chants. Yeah, I think people were on their phones checking, what's going on with the game? You know, well, we're stuck here at this WWE show tonight. So I think you have a point there.
And then speaking of boring chants,
before
we get into the card, I want to ask you guys, the boring chants started and they instantly got muted. During the main event, they chanted, "We want Ambrose," and that instantly got muted. What do you guys think about them playing with the audio?
I think it's just desperation because they're just so convinced that they need to get Roman Reigns over in any way, shape, or form. They just don't want the image of people hearing the audience boo Roman Reigns, because it's not just pushing him to be the face of the company. They're also trying to sell him to advertisers and other companies, other partners, saying, hey, this is why WWE is the place to be for family sports entertainment, and this is our star. But when other companies look and say, okay, let's invest in Roman Reigns, let's see what it's all about, but then they hear the audience booing him, it's like, why am I going to invest, why am I going to have this guy appear in a Coca-Cola commercial or, you know, a Nike commercial when the fans don't like him?
Yeah, I've noticed, Sam, since Payback, that they've been messing with the audio a lot, and I think that really sucks. You know, I'm paying $9.99 for this, and you're muting the audience. You're messing with the crowd reactions, and you're muting Stone Cold Steve Austin when he's interviewing AJ Styles and Stone Cold podcast. It's a lot of just stupid stuff that got going on there that I really don't approve of at all. I think it's really, you know, dumb to mute the crowd and turn the sound down and all that stuff. I mean, if you guys know the other night when they had the show going on, 1 minute the announcer's volume levels would be really low, and then they come way up for some reason. So I don't know what's going on with that, but I think it's the wrong move.
I think it started at WrestleMania, because I remember reading that people were saying that the boos at WrestleMania for Roman didn't really come out on TV. But what about Steve Austin? I didn't see the Steve Austin podcast yet. What did they mute him saying? Like TNA?
No. They mentioned the TNA came out. They talked openly about TNA. They had pictures of TNA when AJ Styles was there.
So I bet Dixie loved that.
Oh, of course. They got more over in that segment than they ever have in the entire duration of the company. but it started earlier on in the show when Austin, you know, he dropped a couple of four-letter words, and I guess they muted the entire everything he was saying. So I was kind of like, okay, either, you know, Steve Gerwig brought up the point of, was this podcast live or was it pre-recorded? I'm assuming this was pre-recorded.
It was supposed to be live, but it might have been pre-recorded.
Yeah, I think it was pre-recorded. So I'm like this, you know, to fix this situation, why not have two versions of the podcast, the uncensored version and then the censored version? Because the WWE Network is supposed to be uncensored. As far as I remember, that's what they touted. Uncensored, unedited, uncut. That's what they said.
Yeah, except for Over the Edge 99.
Right. Well, that's, you know,
they cut them now in the shreds.
Yeah, well, they had to.
Yeah,
but other than that, I don't know. I sent a really nice letter to the BBB today about the WWE Network, so we'll see what happens.
Well, that's good. I hope that they step in and fix a few things for us.
Oh, they got to have a lot of things fixed, dude. It's crazy.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so let's get into Money in the Bank, shall we? Did you guys catch a pre-show? Because I did not.
I did not catch the first match where the Golden Truth went over on Breeze Dangle, but I did catch the Lucha Dragons going over on the Dudley Boys, the second pre-show match. And basically, this was a house show match in every sense of the word. It was meant to just warm the crowd up. Nothing spectacular, nothing special. In the end, the Lucha Dragons went over.
Yeah, I agree with that sentiment. I mean, Fandango and Tyler Breeze coming out with fake sunburns.
Oh, that was so awful. I didn't see that until later on in the show, and I didn't know what happened. I didn't know why they were doing that.
Yeah, it was just dumb. And it's like, Tyler Breeze was, the man at NXT. And this is really a damn shame the way he's falling off since coming to the main roster.
And the worst part about that is it's not his fault.
No, it's not his fault. It's creative's fault. It's Vince's fault. It's everybody's fault. Anybody in there, because I mean, this is a Triple H guy. He's you would think he would have been more protected than what he has been. And Fandango was another one. You know, when Fandango first came out, I mean, he was, that was Vince's project. Then Vince lost, faith in it and pretty much pushed it to the side. I don't have a problem with him and Fandango and Tyler Breeze being a tag team, but it's like fake sunburns, really?
Fandango beat Chris Jericho at WrestleMania, you guys.
And Jericho was probably scratching his head, like, I put this guy over and you guys did nothing with him.
Jericho probably doesn't remember who he is. But Tyler Breeze was brought up, I feel like, because they needed an ending to Breaking Ground. And they weren't ready for him, they didn't have a place for him, they weren't going to push him, they just needed an ending to Breaking Ground. And him getting called up was the only person that they had available, probably.
I never, ever thought of that, Sam. That's a very good point. I never put those two together.
Well, dude, I mean, another one that you can, think of real quick while we're on the subject of Breaking Ground would be Apollo Crews. He was also on one of those episodes of that show, and they brought him up, and look what happened to him, too.
Yeah, look at all the guys they brought up.
Exactly.
Baron Corbin.
Yeah, I mean, the only one who's been successful, has had a successful run since they brought him to the main roster, was Kevin Owens.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about the NXT era,
yeah,
these guys aren't really being successful in the main roster.
No, not at all. I don't know, man. The way I look at it right now is it kind of reminds me of WCW circa 99-2000, when they were pushing a lot of the newer, younger guys, and people really weren't with it.
The natural born thrillers, you mean?
Well, natural born thrillers, three count, young dragons.
Yes.
Yeah, Jimmy Noble-san. Ironically, though, the era of WCW you guys are referring to, Nitro went to 3 hours.
Ah, yeah. Well, yeah, and then they went back to 2 hours later on when they realized that 3 hours was a bad idea. Well, I mean, but, honestly, I mean, going a little off topic real quick, the only reason they had that third hour is because they had to produce Thunder, and they wouldn't give Bischoff any more money, but they wanted that second show on TBS. So that's the reason why they had to take Nitro 3 hours. Bischoff knew it was a bad idea to go 3 hours. But WCW, much like WWE, they didn't utilize that third hour correctly. And that's why it didn't work. I mean, that third hour for Raw is just a disaster. If that show was 2 hours in its current form right now, I wonder how it would be.
And it's not just 3 hours, because there's dark matches, there's superstars, and there's 3 hours of Raw. Like, those people are there for four and a half, 5 hours.
It's going to be longer for the pay-per-view, because you got the kickoff show that happens an hour before, and then you have the pay-per-view, which is 3 hours, but now the pay-per-views are going overtime to try to sell the network, so they're going past the 11 o'clock hour on the East Coast. I mean, I think Money in the Bank on the East Coast ended almost at 11:30.
Yeah, but did Payback and Extreme Rules go over the time? Because I feel like this one did, just because of the basketball game.
No, the other two didn't, but this one did, for sure.
Yeah, this one did.
They probably wanted to stall then and have the main event after the game was over.
Yeah, that would make sense. Now, it'll really set the tone when Battleground comes around, to see how long Battleground goes for. Then you'll know if it was all about the NBA. But, SummerSlam is going to be 4 hours from what we're being told. So you put the 4 hours in there plus the dark matches kickoff show, those people are going to be there for about 5 hours, including when they're standing in line to get into the arena.
Yeah, and half of them will be at NXT the night before, too.
Exactly. I don't know. It's just like, my God, people are already complaining, dude. It's like 3 hours of Raw, then you got 2 hours of SmackDown coming up, and then you got NXT. It's really overkill, really.
And now we have two pay-per-views a month coming up?
Yes, yeah.
I mean, it's more content. It's more content for my money, but at the same time, it's like, man, can I keep up with all this stuff?
I'm just glad that they're bringing back Clash of Champions. you know, Clash of Champions and Backlash are coming back in No Mercy. I grew up with that, so.
Yeah, most definitely.
Well, it's funny because they're putting out more and more content, you know, which is great because, you know, I like more. But as you said, Sam, are you going to be able to keep up with it? That's going to be the first problem. The second the thing is, if you can't keep up with it, you're going to pick and choose what you want to stick with and what you don't want to stick with, which I'm sure WWE doesn't want. I'm sure they want everybody to like everything. And plus, they're having enough time, you know, keeping quality control intact for the content they're putting out now. And now all of a sudden they add more shows to it. So I hope that doesn't dilute everything as we move on to Battleground and beyond.
Yeah, they used to have, you know, when Nitro was around, they had Raw, Nitro, SmackDown, Thunder, and two pay-per-views a month. But I was a teenager then, you know. I didn't really have life responsibilities like I do now. And so it's just, it's going to be hard. But, I mean, we've done it before. We could do it again, I guess.
No, I agree with you. Because when I was a teenager, man, sometimes you had three pay-per-views a month. WCW, WWE, and ECW. Plus the ECW show, Raw, Nitro, SmackDown. Down Thunder, even WCW Saturday Night when it was still good, and it didn't seem like it wasn't even a hassle to keep up with all those shows combined. flash forward a few years, a wife, a job, and actual abilities. It's like, damn, I could barely keep up with a 3-hour Raw. And I do a podcast about that show.
Yeah, you know what? You know, it's funny because you mentioned all those shows. I mean, that's how it used to be with me. You know, it's like, yeah. So how it would start, you go with Nitro on Monday, Raw on Monday. Then the weekend came, it was WWF Shotgun Saturday Night, WCW Saturday Night. Then Sunday came, it was WCW Pro. As a matter of fact, I go back to Saturday morning because I would watch WCW Main Event, which on the West Coast would be about 6 o'clock in the morning. And all that was a damn recap of what happened on Nitro. But either way it goes, I was a mark, so I'm watching all of it. And then, then watch Livewire.
Yeah, Todd Pettengill.
Yep, Livewire.
I don't know how it worked out. Stars.
Yeah. I mean, you also had WCW Worldwide, and you also had ECW Hardcore TV. For most people, that was on at like 1 or 2 in the morning. Here in Boston, it was on at 1 in the morning.
It was on.
I never got there.
It was midnight here, midnight in Cali, and then I also watched a show called NWA Wildside.
What? You got Wildside on TV?
Yes.
Wow. I'm jealous. So,
and I believe it was the same one. There's another one, the Burt Prentice group. I used to get too. So, and it was all those matches where they used to have this guy named the Colorado Kid was the champion at the time, and he was the main event in most of those shows. So it was a lot of wrestling. But you know the problem? Here's the thing about it. The difference between now and then is that you can consume and keep up with everything back then because it was actually entertaining. That's what it is. Now we don't have to keep up with it because, like, dude, I can just, you know, go to Facebook and see what the hell happened, and I don't have to watch all the bad stuff.
You know, I used to, I don't know how it worked for you guys, but for me, Nitro would replay like at 1 in the morning or 12 or whatever it was. And I mean, you're right though, Frank, because it would be like Cruiserweights, it would be like Chris Jericho, it would be the NWO, it would be all these interesting things, and 5 hours would just fly by.
Dude, let me tell you right now, you know, on the West Coast in Cali, Nitro would start at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. All right, so we get the live feed, the East Coast feed at 5. Nitro would be over, and then the replay would come back on, and that's the same time the replay was on that Raw would come on, because remember Raw used to be on 7:57. So I had already saw Nitro, right? And yeah, Raw is on. But I'm watching Nitro again, so I'm flipping back and forth, you know what I'm saying? I didn't have to flip back and forth because I've already seen Nitro, but I did it anyways because Nitro just was a better show. And then when Raw went to 2 hours, now I got a problem here, but still kept flipping back and forth. And then Thunder, Thunder came along and SmackDown. Go ahead, Ali.
You got something, Ali?
Well, also to speak on your point, Frank, the reason why it was so fun to watch all that, because not only was it all really good for the most part, but there's also three different visions, or four different visions if you watched more than three groups, three different companies, three different distinct companies in pro wrestling, with ECW, WCW, WWE. Now, for the most part, it's WWE running all of it. There's with TNA kind of not doing much, or Ring of Honor, you know, trying, but not having much.
Yeah, that's a good point, too.
Yeah, I mean, and it, you know, it goes back to, like, what we're talking about here with Money in the Bank. I mean, we're talking about this show, and, you know, there's been mixed reviews about this, but back then, we would watch a show, that was the most amazing thing we ever saw.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know why? Because neither one of us were smart to the business shit. You know what I mean? That's what it was. We weren't smart to it. We just, the red wrestling captivated our imaginations. We were just, you know, we know our damn thing, so it doesn't really matter. We're more critical now than we were, say, those years ago when WCW was around and WWF was around and ECW was around.
Yeah, but if you guys were like 12, 13, 15 years old right now, like, would you like wrestling?
Absolutely not. There's nothing cool about there's nothing cool about it. I'm going to tell you right now, the biggest thing is that, you know, WWF back in the day, a lot of people don't remember this. Is they say, well, let's bring back TV-14. Let's, you know, TV-14. Okay, you got to remember something. During a lot of that stuff when Austin was out there and really getting on, you know, in the early days with McMahon, that was still a TV-PG show. So WWF at the time knew how to do things within a PG environment. I mean, it's not like it is now. I mean, today, these kids today think that, you know, what they're watching is good TV. I suggest you look on the network and watch the Monday Night Wars. You'll see good television back then.
You know, a lot of people say bring back...
A kid that's 9 years old, you know, Sam and Abby, wearing a t-shirt saying, that's not... No. I'm just saying, I was just saying, if you look at kids nowadays, you know, who think that what they're watching is cool, but look at a 9-year-old kid back in the Action era, dude, wearing a t-shirt that says Other Side Jackass on it. That, you know what I'm saying? That's the difference. You got Other Side Jackass, and you got Never Give Up. You know what I'm saying?
I still have a t-shirt when I was like a teenager that says Got Head. Yeah, for sure. I still got that. I still have it. Oh man, what was I gonna say? Oh yeah, a lot of people talk about bring back, you know, the get rid of PG, get rid of PG. A lot of people say get rid of PG, but I am a firm believer that they can put on, if they really wanted to, a compelling show without cussing and without titties.
I agree with you 100%. It's just that they're playing it safe because it's a very corporate environment, and it's hard because wrestling is anything but a corporate business, but they're trying to make it corporate. And when you do that, you play everything safe, and you won't even take the slightest risk. And we don't take the slightest risk in a PG environment. That's what makes the product stale. That's what makes the show hard to watch. But if you take risk and be more creative in a PG environment and realize you don't have to swear, you don't have to light people on fire or whatever, you can have compelling TV.
But see, there's nothing wrong, though. There's nothing wrong with the swearing part. Because you see a lot of PG shows, they're swearing in them. So that's not really the issue. It's not really the swearing. The issue is basically, can you force the creative people that you're paying all this money to come up with interesting, compelling, you know, storytelling? Is it possible to still do that in 2016? I think it can be. But it's all about if WWE wants to do that. I look at NXT, and NXT... It has very little story-driven stuff going on there, but it for some reason, it all makes sense. But you look at the stuff in the main roster, it just seems like it's all muddled together, and they don't put as much emphasis on the continuity of what they're doing. Because one week, this woman's a face, and next week, she's a heel.
Well, also, when you look at the landscape and how wrestling's changed, just look at the names of wrestlers today versus back then. I mean, back then, Hulk Hogan, Ravishing Rick Rude, King Kong Bundy, Macho Man Randy Savage, The Ultimate Warrior. List goes on and on. And now today, it's, you know, just the names of wrestlers. John Cena, Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, Roman Reigns. So there's been a big shift as far as characters as well. And that's what really is always drawn wrestling in. It's just characters, not necessarily the brand. And that's where WWE is making a mistake, because they want it to be like the Harlem Globetrotters, where you're not paying to see, you know, basketball player A, B, or C on the Harlem Globetrotters. You're paying to see the entire Harlem Globetrotters package. And WWE's really trying to brand themselves as, you're not paying to see Roman Reigns, even though we want to be the face of the company. You're paying to see the brand of WWE. And that's a mistake.
Yeah, it's Vince McMahon's insecure about his people going off and becoming stars. Another, to further your point, Atlee, here, they used to have cool logos for their wrestlers, like Big Boss Man had like the cop shield, and Randy Orton had the Viper. But nowadays, all their logos are just their initials. All of them. Dean Ambrose, Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns.
I'll say even the entrance music was better back then. Even if the entrance music wasn't a great, even if a particular wrestler didn't have a good entrance theme, at least it fit his character. At least you knew who it was when you heard that song for the first time.
Dude, you know what? I'm glad you guys brought that up, because I thought I was the only one thinking this. You know, they don't have really cool logos anymore. I mean, Stone Cold Steve Austin had, you know, cool logos back in the day with the, you know, the rattlesnakes and all that type of stuff. You know, NWO, of course, had a cool T-shirt logo. But you don't see that nowadays. It's all very generic stuff.
It's all their initials. Even look at Zack Ryder.
Yeah.
Like, just a ZR.
Yeah.
Dolph Ziggler comes out with DZ.
Well, the Seth Rollins shirt, the SR, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like the same thing with the music treatment. I mean, you know, one of the coolest theme songs I ever heard was Jake the Snake Roberts' "Trust Me," because you knew right there when you heard that song he was a heel. You know, if a guy turns now, he still has the same song. Same, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't get that. It's kind of like the last time they did that, though. I will say the last time they actually changed somebody's music and it completely changed their character was Cody Rhodes. When Cody Rhodes had the face protector on. That was the last time I actually saw them put, you know, real emphasis on music.
At some point, they changed Del Rio's music, and it's a lot faster.
Yeah, that version sucked.
Well, even look at Dusty Rhodes back in the day. I mean, polka dots and all, Americana. I mean, I'm not going to be rocking that song on my stereo, but that's a catchy-ass song. When you hear that, man, kind of, you know, swivel your hips a little bit because you know, okay, that's the dream coming out. So, I mean, music just doesn't do it anymore like it used to.
Yeah, and the biggest thing was the Steve Austin shattered the glass. I mean, the glass shattered and the place went crazy every time.
And think of Million Dollar Man's theme. There's one lyric in that song. You know, one lyric.
Yeah.
You know? And it works perfectly.
Hey, Jive Soul Bro, right?
Yes.
All right, let's get down to the first match on Money in the Bank. We have the WWE Tag Team Championships and a Fatal 4-Way match. It was The New Day versus Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows, The Club, versus Enzo and Big Cass versus the VOD Villains. The match went almost 12 minutes. It was a decent match. I knew going in that The New Day was going to win, because they've been touting the Kendrick and London record, and when they bring up a record, they're going to break it. But it was a pretty good match. It was compelling. I can't remember anything specifically fantastic about it, but it's a pretty good match. What do you guys think? Allie?
Well, when I look at this particular match, it started off okay at first, but then you can see halfway through, there was definitely a breakdown of communication, especially near the end, because the New Day hit the finish on Carl Anderson, but yet they pinned Aiden English, who was sitting there for about almost 35 seconds on the mat. And you could tell Kofi Kingston especially was frustrated at the fact that communication and things in general just were not going right in this matchup. And because the thing is, honestly, I've booked many independent wrestling shows here in the Boston area, and when you talk to a worker and tell them, hey, by the way, I need you to work a triple threat or a four-way, most people roll their eyes because they know it's going to be very hard to make a cohesive story out of a triple threat or a fatal four-way, especially a tag team fatal four-way. And I think Kofi just threw his hands up after a while, and then that's why you saw Carl Anderson get the finish, but for whatever reason, they pinned Aiden English.
I'm going to say this about that match. One thing that I do remember was Kofi Kingston missing the Trouble in Paradise with Enzo and kicking him in the ribs. I remember that. I remember the referee botching the count, too, with the Enzo and Cass. Yeah, so those are the things that I remember about the match. And I also remember the fact that they didn't put the belts on the club, which I think was the wrong move. You should have put the belts on the club. Matter of fact, this match really should never have even happened to begin with. It should have just been straight up the club versus the New Day, in which the New Day lost the championships.
I feel like keep the club away from the belts until you're ready to put them on them.
You know, I actually thought they were going to...
No, go ahead, Ali.
No, I thought there. I actually thought there was a chance that the Vaughn villains were going to get the belts because you look at the teams, New Day, Enzo, and Cass, and the Club. They're already over, so you don't really need to shine them up. Where the Vaughn villains are still kind of fighting uphill battle. So I thought, you know, typical WWE logic. Let's put the belts on the Vaughn villains to get them over. But of course, that didn't happen here.
Which kind of makes me wonder if they're going to have another set of tag team championships for the SmackDown brand.
Do they have enough teams? I mean, I guess they do.
I think they could. I mean, you have down there at NXT. Once again, you got to. I mean, to make this happen, you got to bring up talent from NXT. I mean, you got American Alpha down there. You got the Revival. You got Blake and Murphy. You have a lot of different bodies. You got the Social Outcasts up here. I think they can pull it off. But it might
they can
get
bring
sad.
Back
you
some tag teams as well.
Yeah, I mean, they could. I mean, you know,
Hoss. Oh, you forgot the Shining Stars.
Well, we all forgot the Shining Stars, Sam. I mean,
that's true.
You know,
Vince
they haven't been shining so bright lately.
That's a good way to put it. The next match we saw for the 17th time, Baron Corbin defeats Dolph Ziggler in 12 minutes and 23 seconds. You know, what can I say about this match? I feel like Baron Corbin was working hard. Dolph Ziggler made him look good, and Baron Corbin got the win. I feel like Baron Corbin needed to get the win just because Dolph has been running his mouth on commentary lately. What do you guys think, Ali?
When I look at this match, it was a good match in a sense that both guys worked hard, as you said, Sam, but they told the way wrong story because when it comes to the entrance and it comes to the way that they present Baron Corbin and the way they put him over on commentary, they put him over as if he's a badass. But when the bell rings, they don't have him wrestle like a badass. They have him wrestle these very competitive 50-50 matches with Dolph Ziggler where he somehow ends up getting the end of days to get the 1-2-3. I'm thinking to myself, if you really want to push him as a badass and have him portrayed as a badass, you're telling the wrong story. Have him do what he did at NXT. Have him get a string of 30-second wins and one-minute wins, and you'll just progress the story to eventually where he starts having 50-50 matches and still wins. And right out of the gate, they're not doing anything with him in between the ropes that says, this is a force to be reckoned with, and that's why the character is stale, in my opinion.
Yeah, the one thing that I remember with, you know, in this match here between Dolph Michaels and Baron Corbin was the fact that there was a huge boring chant that broke out during this match that quickly faded away due to WWE's great techniques of hiding the audience. That's what I remember from this match. Other than that, dude, you know what? I hope that this feud is over. And
I hope so, too.
Go on. These two move on from each other. But, I mean, am I the only one who thinks that every time you see, you know, Dolph Ziggler, he looks more and more like Shawn Michaels?
I feel like he's more Billy Gunn, and that kind of sucks for him.
He wrestles like Billy Gunn, but he's looking more like Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, there we go. There we go. That's a good way to put it. Yeah, he does. Especially with the long pants now, yeah, he does look like Shawn Michaels. But he does act in the ring like Billy Gunn, which kind of, you know, isn't good for him. I feel like they did Baron Corbin wrong from day one. Of all people, I agree with Disco Inferno. Disco Inferno says that when he won the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal at WrestleMania, he came out the next day on Raw, he stood next to the trophy, and he wept. He cried because of his achievement, his accomplishment. But what he should have done was he should have thrown the trophy on the ground, and he should have said, screw Andre the Giant, I'm a better wrestler than he ever was, and he should have owned it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I see that. It would have been a real dick heel move to do that, but I don't really think anybody would have cared because, first of all, nobody really cares about this battle royal to begin with, so I don't really think anybody would give a damn about him destroying the trophy, and a lot of people probably didn't even know who Baron Corbin was because a lot of people still don't watch NXT.
And that battle royal, they hit him in there too. Like, you didn't realize until maybe 3 minutes in that, hey, Baron Corbin's in there, and then you kind of put the piece together and said, he's probably going over in this match.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, in the next match, which should have been a Monday Night Raw match, we saw Charlotte and Dana Brooke defeating Natalya and Becky Lynch. Now, this match completely surprised me. I felt like Becky was going to get the pin on Charlotte because to transition the women's title feud, but that's not what happened at all. there was some kind of scuffle. I don't remember exactly what happened, but Charlotte ended up hitting the natural selection on Natalya, and Natalya, they made Natalya and Becky bump into each other, and then natural selection, 1-2-3, and that ended with Natalya being pissed off at Becky, and she did the old heel turn.
Yeah, I mean, Natalya with the heel turn just kind of reminded me of the Big Show. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I mean, nobody cares, dude. No, nobody gave a damn when she got done.
It wasn't a good way to turn heel.
No, it was stupid. People were like, before this stuff happened on Monday when they brought back Sasha Banks, people were like, hey, Vince, Sasha, we want Sasha. That's what you heard in the first 3 minutes of that match is we want Sasha. And Vince is like, I'll give you more Natalya. And then Sasha Banks shows up on Raw Monday. But, I mean, I'm not really thinking Natalya. I mean, can we be over with this feud now and get back on track with the boss?
I think so. I think that's what's going to happen. Ali, what are your thoughts on this tag team match? That should have been on Raw.
I mean, the ladies worked hard and everything. Natalya's heel turn was definitely unexpected. But, in my opinion, with this past Sunday and this past Monday, if someone has gotten the hint that Dana Brooke does not belong on the main roster, they will never get the hint, because in that match on Sunday, her timing was off. She wasn't sure how to feed for moves or anything. It was awful. And then on Monday, it was kind of the same thing. And she's kind of botching a few things here, where there are certain interview segments in moments where she's supposed to really put Charlotte over, but instead she kind of puts herself over, and then Charlotte has to really just yell at her and say, hey, it's about me. And I don't think that's part of the story. I think that's Dana just forgetting what her role is, because remember, she was teaming with Emma originally, and once Emma got injured, then they said, okay, we need something else for Dana Brooke to do. Let's put her with Charlotte. So that's a big jump as far as your position on the card from teaming with Emma, no disrespect to Emma, to being associated with the women's champion, Charlotte. So I just think they got to send Dana Brooke back down to NXT for more seasoning. But with Natalya's heel turn, I am excited to see a Natalya versus Becky Lynch match. I think they'll be good matches.
I just find Natalya's wrestling, just her style, just boring to me. I really can't get with it. It's like we've been here like a million times already with Natalya as a heel, so I'm not feeling it. As far as Dana Brooke goes, Dana Brooke needs to go back down to NXT. She never should have been brought up to begin with. She had one role, and that was a sidekick, and that was it.
Yeah, I feel like she could be on the main roster, but she shouldn't be in matches yet because she's really bad. Speaking of Monday, my favorite part of Monday, one of my favorite parts was when Sasha came out and Dana Brooke went after her, and then Sasha punched her once and then Dana went down. I think she's a little top heavy.
Oh, I agree with you. Oh, it was great to see the boss come back, though, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, it was a funny thing, just the way Dana just went down for one punch.
I mean, I'll give her credit on that one. She sold out like a champ.
She did. Oh, man. Next up on the list, we have Apollo Crews defeats Sheamus. This match was nothing special, nothing to write home about. I'm a big fan of Apollo Crews. I've been following him since Evolve. But this was a bathroom break match for me. I can't get behind this feud. It's new guard versus the old guard, and I don't know when Sheamus became a veteran. But this went 8.5 minutes. Apollo Crews won with a roll-up, which probably means that they're going to fight again.
Well, it's not so much that Sheamus is part of the old guard. It's just that Sheamus is a former, world heavyweight champion and WWE champion. So who's this new guy coming in? It's kind of like the old New Blood storyline from WCW back in the day that went nowhere. Kind of like one of them kind of things here. It's the Millionaires Club versus, the New Blood. And I don't know. I mean, something. The thing with Apollo Crews is he has all the potential in the world to be maybe one day WWE champion, but he's really got to develop some sort of a personality and character moving forward. He has none. I haven't really seen any charisma or anything about him yet that really gets me behind wanting to see him wrestle. I saw some of that stuff in NXT, but then they just brought him up to the main roster without really any fanfare. They played a video, literally before the guy came out, and that was it. And the reactions from the people, they're not there anymore. So, I mean, what do you do with Apollo Crews? You wait for the draft to kind of put the push on him, or I don't really know what they can do with him right now. And then Sheamus, you know, just Sheamus just came off of being a part of the League of Nations, so his credibility is shot.
When you when you look at Apollo Crews, the WWE hasn't given the fans a reason to really care about him, whether you want to boo him or to cheer him. But also one thing you want to look at, too, with Apollo Crews is that he's going to stop... Hold on. Sorry about that. Hold on. My dog's barking in the background. My wife's about to come home and walk through the door, so...
Oh, so okay, I was going to say, sounds like Michael Vick came
over. Oh, yeah, my dog's a mama's boy, so when my wife comes home, he's all happy and everything.
Yeah, no, dog, our dog does that when the roommate comes home.
So just give me 1 second, she's about to walk through the door any minute, and then he'll bark a little bit more, and that'll be it.
Okay.
Hold on, so I apologize for this.
It's all good. So Apollo Crews... you're right, Frank. He has shown no charisma, no personality. They could have at least given some vignettes for a couple of weeks before he debuted, but they just brought him out. And I feel like this past WrestleMania, when they brought up, you know, Apollo Crews and Enzo and Cass, and there's another one that I can't even think of. Oh, Baron Corbin. They weren't ready. Maybe Enzo and Cass were ready, but I feel like Apollo Crews and Baron Corbin really, really weren't ready. And they kind of forced the envelope just to bring people up.
I mean, the same thing, too, could be said for guys like Neville, who just disappeared out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know.
And the Lucha Dragons.
Lucha Dragons appeared out of nowhere. Sami Zayn appeared out of nowhere. And, I mean, I don't know, man. You know, with Apollo Crews and Baron Corbin, it's just one of those things where it's either going to work or it's not. And I think once they split the brands here, I think we'll probably see them, you know, put more focus on these guys. And this is where I have a problem when it comes to the secondary championships, how the United States Championship and the Intercontinental Championship today, they mean absolutely nothing. Because those titles, you know, back in the day, those titles were used to build these up-and-coming guys to one day put them, you know, up into the stratosphere to become maybe the WWE champion or the WCW champion. That's what the U.S. title was originally for. It was the, you know, the precursor to you becoming the world champion one day. Same thing with the Intercontinental Championship. It was a precursor to you becoming the WWF, WWE champion. And it's crazy to me when I sit here and, you know, do this podcast right now, just thinking about how those belts have really fallen off, especially all the hard work that John Cena put into making that U.S. championship relevant, and it means nothing. I mean, the U.S. title is a championship that Baron Corbin could flourish having, or the IC belt is a title that, you know, Apollo Crews could flourish in and you know, really, you know, make mean something. But unfortunately, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, they gave Kalisto the U.S. title for, what, 3 or 4 months? And look where he is now. He's unadvertised pre-show match.
Exactly, exactly.
You back, Ali?
I am indeed.
You care to touch on the Apollo Crews Sheamus match?
Oh, it was a very by-the-numbers match. Nothing wrong with it, but nothing that really stood out either. And in the end, they gave the win to Apollo Crews, as you said, via roll-up. So this feud's probably going to continue. And they're kind of just to pick off where Frank D was talking about, like old guard, new guard, and whatnot. WWE does consider Sheamus one of their guys. I mean, this is a guy that gets paid a lot of money by WWE. He gets paid in the high six figures, you know, so they always feel they have to do something with him, and he did lose credibility with the League of Nations, so I think they're hoping that Apollo Crews might get a little more seasoning as a result of working with Sheamus, but we'll see how that unfolds.
The League of Nations was terrible.
Yes.
That's all. The next match we saw, AJ Styles defeats John Cena in 24 minutes and 10 seconds. This was probably match of the night. These two guys went out there. AJ showed why he belongs in the WWE. He had a hell of a match with John Cena. I think, if I remember correctly, I think John Cena even took a Styles Clash in the match.
He did.
And yeah, that was pretty interesting. And then the match ended with a ref bump. John Cena got him up for the AA. And AJ Styles' foot clipped the referee. The ref went down. The club hit the ring. I almost said the League of Nations. The club hit the ring. They hit the Magic Killer, and they threw AJ on top of John Cena. AJ got the 1-2-3 and didn't even know where he was. I feel like this really shows AJ Styles belongs in the top notch of the WWE.
If AJ Styles didn't prove that he belongs in the top notch of WWE before, as you said, Sam, he definitely proved it at Money in the Bank of this match with John Cena. And I really like the story that the match told as well, that AJ said he's going to prove proof he's the better wrestler than John Cena. And he really out-wrestled John Cena at every turn, and he was really like two or three moves ahead and had John Cena flustered. I mean, even John Cena trying to shake him off of a headlock and Styles would roll out. So I really liked that they told the story, and it was getting down to be like an all-time classic. And then you had the interference with the club to kind of give AJ Styles the cheap win. At first, I had a problem with the finish just because I'd rather have seen a clean finish either way. But after a while, I just thought the answer was really simple. AJ Styles is the heel. He's supposed to win that way. So that, and then after I thought about it that way, I didn't have a problem with the interference.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. AJ Styles cut a promo at the Monday before, 2 weeks ago, whatever, where he said his son asked him, "Dad, how come you never fight John Cena?" And he said, "Because I would wrestle circles around John Cena." And he did just that.
He literally was running circles.
Yeah, he was.
And I also thought that John Cena, based on how he was moving around, he was moving very slow, and he didn't have as much, like, oomph in his moves as he usually does. Now, some people might say that's just, you know, ring rust due to him being gone for so long and having his first match back, but I think he came back too soon. I really do, because I don't think after Monday he's going to have another match until Battleground, if that. But I think he definitely came back too soon.
Yeah, what do you think, Frank, about the match?
I'm going to agree with everything Ali said, pretty much, that AJ won the way he needed to win. I originally, just like a lot of people, thought, you know, damn it, he didn't get the clean win. But, once again, AJ is a heel. He's not supposed to get the clean win. He's supposed to get the win any way he can. That's what heels do. So, I don't have a problem with it. My only problem is going to be, as they continue this series here, does AJ end up getting the win in the final encounter? Because we already pretty much know that if they have a match at Battleground, John Cena is going over in that match. My concern is what happens after Battleground with AJ Styles. And, you know, John Cena, I do agree. I think he came back too soon. John Cena was out there calling spots. It wasn't really as smooth as you would expect from John Cena.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it was really bad with the spot calling this time because you always hear him calling it on Raw and other pay-per-views, but he was so blatant this time to call him the spots. I mean, I knew there were a couple of leapfrog spots that he called very loud, and I was like, man, I know the next five moves because John Cena just yelled them out there, and it's crazy because back in the day, if you got caught doing that, Vince would have a fit, but now, not so much.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you can't hide it, you know, they don't have long hair like they used to have, and the TV cameras are HD, and there's more microphones around, and it's just, yeah.
That is a good point. That's a good point, especially with the microphones.
Yeah, most definitely. Okay, so let me ask you guys a question real quick here. Kevin Owens came in about a year ago. He beat John Cena in their first match, and then he went on to lose two matches in a row. First question is, did that hurt Kevin Owens? And second question is that going to happen to AJ Styles?
I don't think that hurt Kevin Owens because he got the first win. Because he's the heel, and in his first match at WWE, he beat John Cena. So even if he lost the last two, which he did, he still has that memorable moment, which is the most memorable of the three matches. Plus, Kevin Owens didn't have as strong of a reputation outside of WWE as AJ Styles did. So I think that's where the difference lies.
I agree 100% with that. You know, if you look at Kevin Owens, the one difference between the two, between AJ and Kevin Owens, is simply this. Kevin Owens came into WWE before AJ Styles. Kevin Owens was a former NXT champion, and the first night that he had an encounter with John Cena, he laid him out. I think the same thing can be said for AJ Styles, except for one thing. AJ didn't hold any belt in WWE before he got, you know, to WWE. So I think that's the only difference there.
Plus, you're going with two different directions because the Kevin Owens thing was really just to establish Kevin Owens as a character, where AJ Styles is already established, so you're really just trying to establish him as a heel more than just establish the man himself.
Yeah, you know what? His mic work has been so much better since he turned heel, AJ Styles.
Yeah, you know what? He doesn't flub as much on his lines like he kind of was, and it just seems like I'm seeing the prick AJ Styles that I saw in TNA, and then, you know, that I saw in Ring of Honor is what I'm seeing, and I'm digging it. You know what I'm saying?
Hell yeah, Hell yeah, Bullet Club, AJ Styles in the house. Up next, we had Money in the Bank ladder match, six-way ladder match. We saw Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, Chris Jericho, Cesaro, Del Rio, and Dean Ambrose, who eventually got the win in this match. It was a really interesting Money in the Bank ladder match. My favorite part was the part where they had the ladder set up, and they had two guys. And usually those kind of look phony and set up, but these guys just made it look beautiful. They had the right guys for the match. There was a point in the match where the ladder got knocked over, and Del Rio took a really bad bump, and I thought he legitimately got hurt. But it turns out, you know, he's fine. Dean Ambrose for the win. What do you guys think?
I like the fact that Dean Ambrose went over in this match, but I did go into the match thinking Kevin Owens was going to win because I thought that Kevin Owens or even Chris Jericho winning this match would make for very entertaining television because those two teasing cash-ins week after week would be some interesting stuff. But, you know, with Dean Ambrose going over and the place just went unglued at T-Mobile Arena, and plus with the end result at the end of Money in the Bank, that's one less thing WWE Creative has to worry about when it comes to the draft. They don't have to worry about what do we do with the Money in the Bank winner. Now they can just focus on everything else.
I was not a fan at all of Dean Ambrose winning the match. I'm not a Dean Ambrose fan at all. So I went into the match expecting Kevin Owens to win because Kevin Owens is red, you know, red hot right now. And on everything he does, whether it's wrestling in the ring, as far as his promos go, commentary, the dude can do it all. So I would have had fun watching Kevin Owens come out there and tease cash-ins when they weren't going to happen. Same thing goes with Chris Jericho. I'm not the biggest Chris Jericho fan either, but the guy's really been impressing me lately, especially with these stupid idiots, you know, cash phrase he's got going there. So I wasn't happy when Dean Ambrose won the match, but nonetheless, that's what they did. And, you know, it is what it is.
You know, going into the match, I felt like Roman Reigns was going to be champion, you know, till the end of time. And I was expecting Kevin Owens to win, too, just because we need a heel babyface dynamic. But Dean Ambrose got the win. I was happy. I'm a huge fan of Dean Ambrose. I feel like he's one of the most realest guys in the room, bada boom. And I think that was a good choice, Dean Ambrose. Up next, we had Rusev defending his United States title versus Titus O'Neil. Now, this match was placed really weird on the card. I was surprised to see this match so late. I forgot this match was even happening at this point. It was pretty much a squash match. You know, nobody expected Titus to win. And this match was happening when the game ended, when the basketball game, championship game ended. This match was happening. So I felt like this match was there to stall, to kind of get some time. And Rusev gets the win. What do you guys think?
Hey, listen, here's the question I got real quick. Okay.
Okay.
Where were all the Titus O'Neil fans that when Titus O'Neil came out the other night at Money in the Bank? You remember?
Yeah. Where's all the supporters when he got suspended?
Exactly. You remember when Titus got suspended? Everybody was upset about that. And when the guy came out the other night at Money in the Bank, you could hear the damn crickets in the building. Nobody cared.
When he came back in the Battle Royal a couple weeks ago, nobody cared.
Exactly. So what does that show you? And this match to me, it really, really exposed Titus O'Neil as far as him not being able to keep up with Rusev, him not being a good worker. It was just a horrible match to watch. This is one of those ones where I was literally falling asleep.
Titus O'Neil, I personally wouldn't call him a bad worker, but he's a very limited worker. You're not going to be able to have a dynamic match with him. He's basically the kind of guy that does kick, punch, and gets heat. That's basically what he does. When you put him in there with Rusev, who can do a lot of things, and you're trying to do a lot of things with him, oftentimes you get exposed. That's what happened to Titus O'Neil. They worked hard, and they worked a very physical match, where they're clubbing each other really hard with forearms and clotheslines and whatnot. But in the end, I think it all just boils down to the decision from Creative, because nobody bought Titus O'Neil going into this match at all as a U.S. title challenger, and nobody bought it at match time either. And that's why you can hear crickets, especially when Rusev made him tap out clean on Father's Day, the center of the ring, in front of his kids on pay-per-view.
I honestly feel like Rusev needs to be main eventing. Not main eventing, but he needs to be fighting main eventers for the U.S. title because he is at that level, and he's facing a guy that's way below the card compared to him.
Well, here's the thing, though. You know, when you say that, you got to remember, too, Rusev is another one that just came off of that League of Nations storyline. And he has so much heat on him from what happened with him and Lana. So, I mean, I don't know. You know, I kind of consider him and Titus in the same boat.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe he needs to get his momentum back.
Yeah, well, remember, he hit that brick wall known as John Cena, and it all went down from there.
Yeah, now AJ is against that wall.
Hopefully AJ and the club, you know, they can club his ass before that happens. Speaking of the club real quick, you know, I said this to Abby and I want to ask you too, Sam. What did you think of the club's new logo?
You know, I heard, I think you mentioned it on the GRP. I didn't even notice it. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, it's if you look on the back of the jackets of Gallows and Anderson, it's on there, and it's on AJ Styles' tights too.
It's not a gas mask anymore?
It's a gas mask, but it looks like it has some swords in it, and it has a Japanese flag. It's pretty badass.
Interesting. I haven't seen it. I gotta check it out. Well, you, Ali, what do you think of it? Did you see it?
Oh, yeah. Frank D and I were talking about it during our recap, and it was funny because I was saying a while ago, I don't know if I would buy WWE merchandise titled The Club, but if they're going to start making club merchandise with that logo, I'm definitely all in.
Speaking of The Club, I'm pretty hungry. I can go for a sandwich right about now.
Well, if Brock Lesnar was still around, he'd go to Jimmy John's.
Yeah, most definitely. In our main event, we saw WWE World Heavyweight Championship, Roman Reigns defending against Seth Rollins. Now, this match, I was completely oh, here, you sent me the picture. That is kind of neat. The club. That's cool. That's cool. What was I saying? I was shocked to see Roman coming into the match as the aggressor. He was talking smack, which is definitely a heel move. He was clotheslining him in the corner going, come on, you're the little brother. You ain't ready. You ain't ready. And it just seemed weird that Roman was acting like that. But I guess knowing what we know now kind of makes a little more sense. My favorite part of the match, I don't think it was the ending of the match. My favorite part of the match was when Roman went to spear Seth, and Seth kind of caught his arms and jumped back and turned it into a pedigree. I don't know how that happened, because I feel like if that was real, if it was a real, like, spear, Roman just would have ran right through him, and pedigree wouldn't even happened. But there was some cooperation there. But eventually Seth hits the pedigree, and I'm like, whatever, he's going to kick out. And one, two, three happened, and I was completely shocked because, like I said before, I'm expecting Roman Reigns to keep the belt at least for a year, you know, to make Roman look strong. And we have a new champion, Seth Rollins. What did you guys think of the Roman Reigns versus Seth Rollins match that we've been waiting for almost 2 years now?
I thought it was a pretty good match. I mean, I definitely came out of my seat when I saw the spear into the pedigree. I liked how that spot came together. And I thought, you know, it was a really well-timed match, a well-paced match, especially for Seth Rollins' first big match since coming back from the injury. But I was a little confused at times because, for the most part, Roman Reigns was a full-blown heel, and Rollins kept kind of going back and forth subtly between heel and babyface, so it really made it confusing as to, okay, with the story, should I hate Roman Reigns or should I like him? Especially with all the heel mannerisms you were talking about, Sam, was like, come on, you're not ready. You're not the man. You're just a boy.
You know what? I'm going to tell you right now, I really enjoyed this match, particularly because of Roman's heel tactics during the match. I mean, this guy was, I mean, you were waiting for the babyface comeback of Seth Rollins, but the problem is that Rollins isn't the babyface. So, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was good for what it was.
You know, with the facial expressions, with the smack talking, with the way he carries himself, I feel like he's a Roman Reigns is a natural heel, and they just won't embrace it.
I completely agree with you on that, but again, when you're in desperation mode and you need a new star, Roman Reigns is the guy they've pitched their wagon to, and, you know, I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit later.
This match went 26 minutes. 26 minutes. And then...
So wait 1 second here, Sam. So Roman was able to work a 26-minute match.
Yeah.
With really no problems. It was an entertaining match from start to finish.
It was a decent match. It was a lot better than the WrestleMania main event.
Oh, hell yeah. And the two matches he had with AJ were good, too. So it's pretty much, if you put Roman Reigns with the right worker and Roman Reigns is actually motivated, you can, you know, he'll do some good stuff. He'll do some good shit.
You know, I mean, same thing I've been saying about John Cena for a long time, you know. You put John Cena in there with a CM Punk, you put him in there with a Daniel Bryan, and John Cena can go. And I feel like Roman's doing the same thing. You know, you put him in there with AJ Styles, with Seth Rollins, with Dean Ambrose, and he'll look good. So we had a double main event, apparently, because Dean Ambrose said on Monday night, he got both of their faces and said, when I win Money in the Bank, I'm going to cash in that same night. And so I was waiting for it. I was waiting for it. I was waiting for it. Dean's music hits. Seth looks at the entrance and goes, come on, come on, bring it on. And Dean comes from behind, which is funny because he's, you know, he's a baby face, and Seth didn't even do that. Dean comes from behind, clocks Seth with the briefcase, rolls out of the ring, and gives the briefcase to the referee. Now, before we get into this, do you guys find it weird how every single time somebody tries to cash in the Money in the Bank, the referee is, like, so confused? Have you noticed that?
I have noticed that, but I'm starting to think that that's just what WWE tells them to do. I think when they do a teased cash-in or an actual cash-in, they just want the referee to kind of mirror what they're hoping the fans react and go, oh my goodness, oh my goodness, it's going to happen, it's going to happen, what's going on? But it's weird because you figure the referee would be the most poised individual because they know that this could potentially happen. But yes, it's something I've definitely noticed over the years.
Yeah, they always have that confused look. You know damn well what the hell is going on here, dude.
Wait, what? You want to cash this in right now? Are you sure?
Now, you know, the thing that was... what happened though, that I would have done was I would have let them, you know, finish playing Seth Rollins' music and not even hit Dean Ambrose's music. It would have been a complete surprise. Ambrose would have came from behind, hit him with the briefcase, and then cashed in 1, 2, 3, there you go. But I think hitting the music is like, well, you already pretty much know what's going to happen to the end result.
Yeah, no, they shouldn't have hit the music at all, I agree. But they have to now. Even when they do run-ins, they hit music.
Which is stupid, ridiculous. Because, like, okay, so the person's watching this go on, and then all of a sudden, booyah, they're going to hit the music. It kind of reminds me of when CM Punk made his return that night with the championship after he had been gone for a couple weeks, and they hit Tulsa Personality, and, you know, the guy comes out in his wrestling gear, instead of coming through the crowd with, you know, like an outsider. Makes no sense.
It almost
looks like CM Punk, you know, knew he was going to be there. It almost looks like CM Punk knew he was going to be there ahead of time, right? Wearing his gear,
I never even thought of that.
And he has his shorts on. Yeah, why would you do that? You should have booked the guy. The guy left the company. John Cena is the champion. CM Punk has the other championship. Why not bring the guy through the crowd? Why have him come down the ramp and in his wrestling gear? It makes no sense. It's stupid. WCW never would have done that.
Yeah, why is CM Punk backstage?
Well, that's the thing, because if wrestling was, quote, real, you wouldn't play the music at all, because if wrestling was real and I had the Money in the Bank briefcase and Sam, you just beat Frank for the WWE Championship, and I'm just sitting there, okay, I'm going to cash this belt in, I'm going to pin Sam, get that championship, I'm ready, wait a minute, I got to talk to the sound guy and get my music to play first.
Right, and then that alerts me that you're coming out.
You're trying to tell us that wrestlers, yeah, so it's like, you're trying to tell me though that if I'm so focused on cashing in this briefcase to beat you for the WWE title, I'm going to really care if my music plays?
And then on top of
that,
you guys...
Like, you can't cash in?
His music played, and he wasn't even in the gorilla position. How did the sound guy know he was coming out?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's like, if you look back in a day at WCW, whenever you saw the outsiders appear on camera... it was complete chaos because they would just, you know, the camera just pans to the crowd, where are they at, you know what I'm saying? You don't get that unpredictability on WWE TV like you did in WCW. That's one thing I will say WCW did do a good job at, is that they didn't do, you would never see something like that happen in WCW.
Yeah, wrestling is lacking unpredictability these days.
But besides the music thing, though, I do like the story of how it unfolded, because again, Seth Rollins did the same exact thing to Roman Reigns at WrestleMania 31, and now it's kind of karma coming back to bite him in the rear end as Dean Ambrose does it to him. But I thought it was a little sweeter, because instead of just jumping in before the match is over, making it a triple threat, he lets Seth Rollins win the championship, celebrate and think, wow, I did it, I really did it, I got the belt back, and then he cashes in the realize that. So I thought that was actually even better. A really good storytelling in that regard.
I do agree with Seth on one hand, though. Seth didn't fight anybody from behind when he won the belt.
That's a good point. That's a really good point.
Yeah, this match lasted 9 seconds. He hits him in the briefcase. He gets the referee to hit the bell, and he hits Dirty Deeds 1-2-3. Dean Ambrose ends the night as your WWE World Heavyweight Champion.
Even though I think it's going to be a transitional reign, I think it's long overdue because out of the three Shield members, he's clearly the most popular, and he may be the most popular wrestler on the roster. So whether it's a transitional reign or not, I think fans are going to enjoy the fact that Dean Ambrose is now the WWE World Heavyweight Champion.
I think it's arguable to say that he's the most popular. I think if you put him against Seth Rollins there, I mean, you know, I think Seth Rollins might be a little bit more popular than Dean Ambrose if Seth Rollins was a babyface. I mean, look what happened the night he returned, and look what happened the night that he came out there in Baltimore, which they made a mistake. The guy should have been a babyface, but they turned him heel. How can you have Seth Rollins and see Seth Rollins 24 on the WWE Network for $9.99 and bring him back as a heel after watching that story? It's stupid.
Yeah, that was a total babyface documentary.
Yes, it was. It's you, why do that? That's stupid.
You know, they set this match up the next night on Raw. They set up the triple threat match for Battleground. And I'm just scratching my head because, to me, the Seth Rollins, the Roman Reigns, the Dean Ambrose match should be a WrestleMania main event.
Agreed, because I feel that whole dynamic is something that fans have wanted to see for a long, long time. And it's definitely WrestleMania worthy. It's something that perhaps should happen at WrestleMania. But I wonder with the ratings being so low on Raw as of late that they're in SmackDown for that matter, they're just saying, you know what, screw waiting till WrestleMania or anything else, let's just do it now and get these numbers back up.
Yeah, no, definitely, they're definitely hot-shotting the match, but, you know, sometimes you got to do that. Let's see, what else happened? So, let's get into the Roman Reigns thing, so I think we're all getting a little bit fatigued here, but I do want to talk about Roman Reigns. So they set the triple threat matchup for Battleground, which is July, whatever, it's in 5 weeks from Money in the Bank. And Tuesday morning, they announced that Roman Reigns has been suspended for violating the WWE wellness policy. Now, I was under the assumption that Roman Reigns was completely protected from this. He looked really, really big about a year ago. He's slimmed down a little bit since then. I don't think he's on steroids. I don't know what's going on with Roman Reigns, but he definitely violated the wellness policy, and he's gone. I guess, first of all, do you guys think that taking the belt off of Roman was because of the wellness violation policy? And if this never happened, would he still be champion?
Oh, I think it's most definitely due to the wellness policy violation. I think that if Roman never would have tested dirty for whatever he tested dirty for, he would still be WWE champion right now. This would have continued on. They were in full Roman Reigns mode, okay, and there's no doubt in my mind. I mean, yeah, that they're saying that the houses were down, the ratings were down, but that's what anybody. I mean, let's see what happens with Dean Ambrose. Yeah, the ratings were up for Dean Ambrose this past week, but you got to put it into perspective that that's the night after a pay per view, so of course people are going to want to know what happened if they weren't paying attention the night before. So let's see if Ambrose can sustain that moving forward. But as far as Roman Reigns go, listen, here's the bottom line. I think the time will tell when he comes back how they feel about him with the way he's pushed on TV.
I think we're going to find out a lot on this Monday on Raw is what's going to happen to Roman Reigns, because we know that this test failure was announced Tuesday morning, and that's before SmackDown was taped, which airs on Thursday. So they didn't change anything and still went ahead and said, yes, we have the triple threat match. But when we get to Monday Night Raw live on Monday, I wonder if they even acknowledge the test failure or just acknowledge that he's suspended without saying why he's suspended, and they're just making a singles match between Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins, because it's not as sexy as a triple threat match, and we have seen that match before between those two, but it still will be a good match. But I'm curious to see what they would do if Roman Reigns, you need a time machine for this, of course, if he never had the test failure, because the reports are that high-ranking WWE officials knew about this going into Money in the Bank, and that's most likely why Roman Reigns was the belt was taken off of Roman Reigns. But also, if they were going to go with a three-way Shield feud regardless of this test failure, I think it serves Dean Ambrose well to be the WWE champion, because if they didn't take the belt off of Roman Reigns, they did the feud anyway, that means only two of the three members of the Shield would have been WWE champion, and Ambrose would have kind of looked like the weak link in that situation. But now you don't have to worry about that because he's the champion.
Yeah, I think Dean Ambrose is the weak link just by the way they built up all the three guys. And him being the champion, he goes in as the strongest. Yeah, definitely.
But he's a transitional guy. He'll be a transitional champion. No doubt about that. I mean,
does Dean keep the belt past Battleground?
I think he does, but I think there'll be two world champions.
It's possible. It's definitely possible. They're talking about splitting the belts. I was thinking they could do something where there's like a double pin, and they decide to split the belts or something like that. That'd be pretty good. I guess. I don't know.
I'm not the biggest Dean Ambrose fan out there, but I'm willing to see where they go with this. You know what I'm saying? He might win me over. You know what? It took a long time for me to start liking Chris Jericho again. So Dean Ambrose has a shot here. I'm just really not the biggest Ambrose fan. When I look at Ambrose, I look at him like, so PG, low-budget Brian Pillman.
I am a Dean Ambrose fan, but I will be the first one to admit that over the last couple of months, his work in the ring has looked a little weak, especially with his punches and his intensity, but I think maybe being WWE champion is going to change all that. And plus, I mean, you could change Vince's mind sometimes. You could change Stephanie McMahon's mind. You could change people's mind. And I bet you anything, Dean Ambrose is looking at this as an opportunity to say, you know what, let me work my ass off now that I'm the champion and just blow them out of the water and put on a good match in those house shows. Hopefully get my merchandise sales up, but if they see an upward tick as far as ticket sales and merchandise sales with Dean Ambrose, they may just stick with him.
Yeah.
I just don't see that at all, because he's not the chosen one. I'm pretty sure that. I mean, listen, put it like this. AJ Styles hasn't been around long enough. He hasn't been around as long as Ambrose, but AJ Styles is up there as one of the top merchandise guys. He doesn't have the belt.
I think it's too soon to put the belt on AJ, even though he's definitely worthy of it, and I think someday he's going to get the belt. But when you get to Dean Ambrose, I mean, there's definitely a credibility issue with him losing so many high-profile matches going into Money in the Bank and then winning Money in the Bank and then cashing it in. So you have restored a little bit of credibility with him, and now I think you just have to have him get some more wins on Raw and SmackDown leading into Battleground. And speaking of the whole Battleground thing, I really hope they take Roman Reigns out of that match. And not because he failed the test. I think they should take him out because this is a match that's 2 years in the making. A triple threat between the Shield. And now, with the test failure of Roman Reigns, you're going to have a build with only two of the three people going in the Battleground. And I think that's a disservice to the feud. And I think it's a disservice to the fans. I think that when you finally have this match happen, you should be in a situation where all three members can be on TV each week and build this match up to something special, and now you're not going to get that opportunity. So I think that's why they should just take him out of the match and then put it back for another day, maybe SummerSlam. But as you said, we talked off air, Frank D, and you said as well, Sam, with the draft coming up, they may not have the opportunity to do so.
Yeah, that's true. Also, I feel like just to say here, they knew about this suspension thing before they announced the match on TV, and if they're going to pull him from the match, they could have easily just made it a one-on-one between Seth and Dean. So they must have some kind of idea, something up their sleeve, what they're going to do with the situation.
Oh yeah, I mean, they knew a couple of days before Roman tested dirty that, you know, this was going down, and obviously they must have a plan here. I mean, the obvious thing would be Roman comes back, he's cleared to come back, and he'll be a part of Battleground. But I think this Monday, unless they film something Tuesday or something, or maybe they film something Monday, some kind of injury angle that's gonna, you know, put him out. But you know, the problem with the whole thing is that they've already announced on the website that he's been suspended because of the wellness policy violation. Everybody already knows about it, So it's kind of hard to say, well, this guy's out because he's injured. And he's suspended, but we're not telling you why when you've already said on the internet, you know, on the WWE.com why the guy's gone. So they kind of put themselves in a corner here with the situation. You know, and I think we all can agree here that this match shouldn't even be happening at Battleground. It should have waited until SummerSlam. You could have had Dean Ambrose win Money in the Bank. You could have had Seth Rollins versus Roman Reigns Part 2 at Battleground and then made a triple threat at SummerSlam.
Yeah, no, but I completely agree with that. They should have done that, had the number one contender match at Battleground.
Yeah, but the problem with this is that, you know, Roman tested dirty. So either way it goes, Roman would have been gone.
And when you said, Sam, that they knew going into Money in the Bank that he tested positive, it just begs the question, when did they know? Like, what time? Like, was the test administered on Friday the 17th? And did the official test results come back on the 18th? Because let's say they found the day before Money in the Bank, which is the 18th, okay, he tested positive. They had to make a decision saying, okay, when do we actually suspend him? Do we pull him from Money in the Bank? Do we, you know, have him do Money in the Bank? Do we pull him from Raw, or do we just have him do Raw and then suspend him on Tuesday so his 30 days begin? And I got to tell you, Vince must be a little upset with this because, number one, you can't use the guy for 30 days. Plus, with the dates and realize, okay, we need to get him through Money in the Bank and Raw on the 19th and 20th, that means you can't have him for the draft on the 19th of July when SmackDown goes live on the USA Network because all likelihood, Roman Reigns might have been the number one or number two pick. And now, you know, if he's still draft eligible, he's still going to be the number one or number two pick, and then people are just going to catcall steroids all day long in the crowd when they call his name, or they just say, you know what, he's deactivated because he's suspended, and then he can do the Steve Austin thing that you suggested, Frank D, where he can just come out and kind of play the field and see what show he goes on.
You know, the bad thing about this situation, too, is that they were trying to build Roman with this squeaky clean image, you know,
face of
the company. And now that's tarnished now. That's nasty. You know, that's what I'm saying. This guy is going to have a lot of heat on him when he goes, you know, when he comes back. He probably has a lot of heat on him right now. But he's going to even have more heat because he pretty much destroyed the image that WWE was doing. Remember when he had those, it was a Make-A-Wish kid was in the front row on Raw, and everybody was complaining about that because Roman went over there talking to the kid before his match, whatever. That's the type of thing they were trying to do with Roman Reigns. They were trying to make him John Cena number two. But here's the problem with John Cena number two. John Cena number two here has a flaw. And he's got a wellness policy violation on his jacket. So that's the problem with Roman Reigns. And hopefully he can bounce back from it.
Well, it's funny you mentioned the image, Frank D, because in the town next over to me in Beverly, Massachusetts, there's actually a billboard, one of those ad council billboards, with like talking about parenting, with Roman Reigns on it playing with his daughter, like front and center over one of the theaters in the town. So I think it's funny that that's up there and now he's, you know, being put out for a wellness policy violation. But I have a question of both of you to just about the wellness policy in general. Do you think the fact that they didn't suspend Roman Reigns immediately when finding out about the wellness policy violation, do you think that hurts the legitimacy of the program? Or do you think WWE was within their right to say, you know what, let's just get through Money in the Bank and Money Night Raw, then suspend him? Because while he did test positive before Money in the Bank, WWE was like, you know what, we did advertise and we did promise him to our fans, so let's at least deliver that promise, then suspend him.
Well, I don't have an example ready to go, but I've heard that they've done this in the past, where they find out that somebody tests dirty and they have a few days to make the suspension happen.
Well, a few years ago, back in 2006, they brought Randy Orton back a couple of days early because it was going into the second ECW one-night stand, and Kurt Angle was doing the open challenge where he was challenging anybody in a four-sided, six-sided, or eight-sided ring to face him on that show, and I guess it was 2 days before the suspension was up, they brought Randy Orton back to answer the challenge. They have played with it before. But now that they're all PG and trying to have a squeaky clean image as a company, I just wonder, you know, if people are going to cry foul because he was suspended right away. But suspending him right away would have meant pulling him from Money in the Bank, which means there would be some disappointed fans. Because even though the internet crapped on Roman Reigns, you have to remember there are Roman Reigns fans out there.
I think it's basically, you know, WWE wanted to give the fans what was advertised, which was him versus Seth Rollins. That was a match that a lot of people wanted to see, and a lot of people wanted to see a title change. So WWE gave it to you all in one night.
But, you know, if Roman Reigns wasn't the champion going into Money in the Bank, then he may have gotten suspended earlier. But they needed to have their championship match. I mean, without that, what do they have?
What decision would you guys make? Would you pull him right away for the sake of putting legitimacy on the program, or would you just say, you know what, we're going to get through these two shows and then suspend them?
I would have gone to the two shows.
I would have gone with the two shows, but Roman Reigns wouldn't have been the champion. My champion would have been AJ Styles. Just saying.
Just going in anyway. I feel like they should have come up with a way to write Roman off television.
I agree
See,
with that.
That's the big problem right there. I'm just saying that's the big problem right there is the way that they went about it. They knew the guy was tested dirty. They knew they were going to suspend him. So why would you book the damn match on Monday? That would have been right there the way to take him out on Monday. Would have been to write him off TV just right there. Then bring him back next month.
Right. In fact, do like an injury angle or something, and he comes out at Battleground.
Exactly. But, hey, they weren't thinking about that. They're just thinking about, hey, let's go ahead and sign up this triple threat match, and then Roman will be back by the time the pay-per-view, and nobody will notice.
Yeah. Nobody will notice. What's going on, Ali?
I was going to ask you guys, do you think they told him? Because I got to tell you, if you told him, let's say Vince McMahon and Triple H Stephanie find out Sunday afternoon or Sunday morning that, okay, Roman Reigns tested positive, and they got to tell him. But they probably decided what they were going to do before they actually informed him. That's what I'm thinking. So once they decided what they were going to do and get through Money in the Bank and Raw, do you think they told him before Money in the Bank that, hey, you got popped, we're suspending you, but it's not going to go into effect till Tuesday, so we're taking the belt off of you, and you're working tonight and tomorrow, and then Tuesday we're going to announce it, so get ready? Or do you think they were like, you know what, he might freak out if he wrestles in front of 14,000 people knowing that in 2 days, his life's going to get turned upside down with negative publicity. So let's not tell him until, like, after Raw or even on Tuesday. Like, how do you think that went down? Just speculation on my part, but if he was told on Sunday before the match, that must have sucked working those two matches knowing, you know, that this was coming. But at the same time, he did work his ass off both nights, so maybe that was his way of saying, you know what, I'm sorry, and I'm going to prove it to you that I still want this, and that's why he worked his ass off.
Take a look at this, guys. Take a look at when Roman Reigns was on the floor after Dean Ambrose was declared the champion. You can clearly see disappointment on the guy's face. So I think they told him that day. I think they told him they were taking the belt off of you tonight, and they told him why. Because Roman Reigns just did not seem like his normal self during that entire match. And that might have been for the better, because he really killed it out there with Seth Rollins.
Yeah, he had a good match. I feel like, honestly, they don't... Places like this, the drug testing places, don't really conduct business on the weekends. So Vince and the company had to have found out Thursday or Friday. And I'm sure as soon as they found out, they sat down with Roman and had a meeting and said, okay, what are we going to do? How are we going to get through this? What's the best way to go? And Roman may have had a chip on his shoulder, but that made him work a little harder.
Yeah, because the thing is, Roman Reigns is not exactly the best person when it comes to selling. So when you talk about the moment that Frank D mentioned where he was on the floor looking all disappointed after Dean Ambrose held the belt up, that wasn't him just selling, oh man, I lost a match. I think that was just a visualization of, man, like, I lost all of this because I screwed up.
Yeah, I agree. You guys have anything else to add? Should we get out of here? It's been a long, long time.
That's all I got too. It's been fun.
It's been fun. So before we go, let's get some social media plugs in here. Go ahead and go first, Atlee.
Y'all can hit me up on Twitter at Atlee Green, and also I'm going to be doing some color commentary for two independent shows this weekend, tomorrow on Friday night and on Saturday night for Northeast Championship Wrestling. They're having their Ring of Thrones tournament. Night one is going to be held in Norwood, Massachusetts. Night two is going to be held in Dedham, Massachusetts. So if you're in the Dedham and Norwood area, come check out the shows and say hi.
Wow, that's awesome, man.
And pretty much, you can hit me up at GurrickReport@gmail.com if you have any questions for myself or anything to do with the Gurrick Report podcast, which you can listen to at Gurrick.net in the audio section. Also on Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and don't forget to check us out at YouTube.com/GurrickNet. It's growing every single day, so thank you very much.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. It's been awesome.
Thank you, Sam, for having us. I really appreciate the...